Welcome to Hail Varsity Radio, the voice of Husker Nation. Insight, opinion, expertise, with the biggest and best names talking Nebraska across the state. Join the show on Twitter at Hail Varsity and at Schmitz _ radio. Call in at 402-466-ESPN or 1-800-825-5865. Here's Chris Schmitz.
It was good strategic work, a lot of technical work. Spent a great deal of time yesterday on rugby tackling. And then we'll move on from there.
Yeah, I don't know how much time was spent on rugby tackling. Mike Riley off the top rope with the steel chair, putting an end to Diaco Week. Hope you're doing okay on a Friday. It's Hail Varsity Radio, Hail Varsity Magazine, HailVarsity.com. Presented by the Nebraska Lottery. Chris Schmidt, 80s action star Colton Stone is in today for the Pride of Chicago, Danny Burke. We are loaded up. We'll talk plenty of Nebraska. We'll get into the weekend in Minnesota. We'll get some recruiting with Greg Smith. We'll talk Scott Frost from a man who covers college football on a national scale. Blair Kirkhoff next hour, Friday forecast. We'll head down to Miami for that Notre Dame, the Catholics versus the Convicts, as that's been running in a loop on whatever, the Ocho even for ESPN. In lieu of both teams being in the top 10 facing each other Saturday night for the first time since 1989. So we'll get caught up with Alan Pinkett, his thoughts on Bob Diaco as well. But we had to do a little arranging here, rearranging. We need a little more time for Bill Dolman and NBC Sports' Bill Dolman, the pride of Fairbury, Bill Dolman, as he is down in Arizona. Bill, thanks for rearranging today. Usually we catch up with you in about 15 minutes. We need a little more time today with all that's gone on this week. How are you?
There's nothing that brings me greater joy than to be on the air with you.
You sound frustrated and angry. I'm sorry. the stewardess just said, sorry, bro, no more peanuts for you.
Well, I got an extra dose of that, but I was up at like 4 o'clock this morning to catch my flight to Phoenix to get the Flagstaff. So it's been a long day, but, you know, I always have time for you guys.
And you end it with me, and you're just like, yay. No, right? That's kind of what you're thinking. But I wanted to get your take on Coach Riley's reaction. You heard it coming in with Bob Diaco. That's where I want to start. And Bob Diaco did the reasonable reason nonsense after an overtime loss to Northwestern. He kind of doubled down with his explanation of more time, and even went into the I've had to unscrew up a lot of screwy things type thought process. What's your read on this from afar? Does it look like the reins are out of Riley's hand, or is this strictly on your defensive coordinator to be better when speaking in public?
Well, the latter for sure. I'm tired of coaches coming in to Nebraska to tell us how much smarter they are than we are. Look, we're not all coaches. I get that. And I get that it's a difficult profession. I get there's a lot that goes into game planning, on and on and on. But from the comment in January of whatever it was, when the four-year case of the flu said, I guess the people of Pittsburgh just understand the hiring process better than the people of Nebraska. And then we get, you know, I coached in the Super Bowl. Okay, yeah, we know. Okay. I was more put off by that than, what was it, 5, 6, 7 years of don't you know who I am? Mm-hmm. But the way that Nebraska fans have been talked down to me, has been incredibly disrespectful for A, any coach to say, but B, for people who coach at the University of Nebraska and are given one of the great programs of all time and arguably the greatest fan base in all of sports. But we're continually, I believe, demeaned that we just don't quite understand how much more we know about the game than you. And it's just going to take so, come on. We're not stupid. We've been watching football, good football, longer than some of those guys have probably been alive. And, yeah, the guy who's got the defensive coordinator job now has got to learn, okay, you might feel that way and you might think that way, but don't say it that way. And I the tit for tat that's going on between him and Mike Banker, and this is now what Nebraska football has devolved into. It's just one thing after another. You just want to just, okay, I don't want to read politics anymore. Mm-hmm. And now I don't even want to read about Nebraska football anymore because it's just so petty.
Well, it is, and it's more about what's going on off the field than on the field because on the field hasn't been good. Bill, I wanted to start off with your thoughts on Diaco. Go ahead.
Okay. Well, I was going to say, look, the whole thing about this this tackling thing, as petty as it sounds, I happen to agree with it. You know, whatever Mike Banker in Nebraska was doing, I believe Nebraska is at the forefront of what all the football ought to be doing, all right? If you want to make the game safer, I've been around the game of rugby a lot in the last couple of years, mm-hmm. and I've seen some mammoth people, huge people, 250-pound people who run 4.5 40s, you know, and they're incredibly athletic, they're incredibly fast, and you hear flesh-on-bone collisions, and guys get up in the sport of rugby. There's no pads other than that, that glorified swim cap they wear. But there's something going on in the sport of rugby that is more brutal than the game of football, to where the injuries aren't near as brutal as they are in football. And I don't know if it's because pads have become, they're so much smaller than they were several years ago. I mean, look at Eddie George when he won the Heisman Trophy. Mm-hmm. I mean, he's wearing, pads that are massively sized as a running back. I just use that as an example because it came to my mind. But, I said 10 years ago on the Average Joe Sports Show, more than that, take away the helmet. Take away the face mask. If you want to make football safer, you need to do some things to make sure that people are playing the game in a way in which they are not, they don't want to get hurt and they don't want to hurt. And the only way you're torpedoing with your helmet first is to inflict pain. I know sometimes those tackles are hard to pull up, and those things happen. But I've talked to several coaches, former players, rugby people. They say the game of football would be safer if the helmet was gone or the face mask was gone, because you'd see guys think twice about how they went in with their head.
Bill, want to get into more coaching thoughts, and you look at Matt Campbell, a hot name. You look at Gary Patterson, his story on ESPN.com as OU and TCU get rolling tomorrow. What's your reaction when you read and saw that Nebraska had interviewed Patterson and chose Pelini over Patterson?
Zero surprise whatsoever. I was in the Mountain West at that time. I've known Gary Patterson for a long, long time. I'm not surprised at all that Tom would have reached out to gauge his interest. TCU had it rolling in the Mountain West, but, they didn't have it rolling to a high level, if you know what I mean.
You didn't know if it was more Mountain West fluff or if they could translate, correct?
Well, the Mountain West was a great conference, and I say that having been there, and even in retrospect, I'm not trying to push it. That was a really good football league, mm-hmm. and you had to be good every week in and week out. But, Gary had a great deal of success. He was known as a defensive genius. He had very good coaches around him. Others have gone on to, coach at other institutions. So it doesn't surprise me that Nebraska would have reached out to him. And I think that when you take a look at it, and I think it was alluded to in the story, Pelini was a popular choice at the time. I think most people looked at it as Turner Gill or Bo Pelini. And I'm not surprised at all. In fact, I think I heard whispers that Gary was on the radar mm-hmm. Back then. But I think, that given Bo's presumed or assumed popularity at that time, perceived popularity at that time, I think that's a coin flip, to be honest with you. Mm-hmm. Now, did we know that Bo was going to go, nuclear as often as he did? Probably not at the time. maybe the pressure got to him, that the fuse got shorter and shorter. I don't know. Certainly, you know, in retrospect, people go, oh, we could have had Gary Patterson. At that time in 2007, people got what they wanted. And I think Tom hired the right guy at that time.
Bill, a thought here on Nebraska, Minnesota, and we don't know what the weather's going to be. It could be snowy. It could be just cold. But any doubt Nebraska bounces back, or do you think doubt maybe has crept into their mind this week?
You know, one thing that I don't think people talk about, and as I follow this team, I think maybe, and granted, they've lost more games on the road, at home. Mm-hmm. I think this is a better team away from Nebraska. I don't think that this team is comfortable playing at home right now. I think that they're looser on the road. Maybe that's because Purdue's not as good as people thought Purdue was. Illinois certainly isn't any good. But I think that maybe that this team just needs to get away from Lincoln because the pressure is too great and it can't handle it. And so I think that they'll be fairly loose. Minnesota's not a very good football team. The shine on the PJ Fleck boat is kind of fading just a little bit. Now, he might get it turned around there, but I don't think they're very good, and I'm not sure that they're confident, although I'm sure they think that this is a winnable game for them, and sure, it sure as hell is. Mm-hmm. But I think Nebraska is a more comfortable team playing away from home.
Bill,
and that's sad to say.
No, it is, and it's just been a draining season. And you and I don't even wear eye black. We talk about football, or we call football, and that's just the reality of things. A thought from you on Iowa and what they did to Ohio State, and is Iowa kind of a program to look at and say, okay, that's maybe how Nebraska needs to be.
No.
Let me finish. Let me finish.
Hey, where's the 7-second delay to allow you to say something like that?
Let me finish. When I say that, it's the fact that you're pretty consistent and you're not having 4-8 seasons. I know 4 years ago they had a 4-8 season. But,
and then they went 6-6, and then they went 8-4, and then they went 12-0, and then they went 4-8.
You're in college, in college football, though, you're seeing more teams kind of build up, climb back up to a 10-11-12 win season, and then you'll have a kind of a reload year, so to speak. Reload being you're in an 8-5. Look at Michigan State. Look at Notre Dame last year. They've had a really good 6 seasons or so, but there was one what the hell happened type year. That's pretty common in college football, isn't it?
So what you're saying is that Iowa is sets the tone for college football. We suck a little less, we are almost good but still suck, and then we're good and then we'll go suck really bad again. That sounds about right.
They don't suck anymore. They just beat Ohio State.
I understand that, but give them a year or two. They'll be 4-8 again. They'll give Kurt Ferentz a 6-year extension on his contract after this year, and they'll go 4-8. Look, college football is somewhat, you know, cyclical for those teams, you know, that can't necessarily maintain that high level that Alabama's on right now. But hey, nobody thought USC was going to plummet to the earth, and all of a sudden, you know, they had a little bit of trouble, and down they go, and then they're back up again.
But even look at Florida State this year.
No, absolutely. They're terrible. And Jimbo Fisher might be out of a job. And Scott Frost would probably be better fit for that job than any other one outside of the 402 area code and you 308 people. It's the nature of the beast anymore, because they spend so much time coddling 17-year-old kids that they think are 5-star, 4-stars, according to a network that has lost 15 million viewers over the past several years. You know, and these kids change their minds. I told you how many months ago, 2 months ago or so, Nebraska will lose at least 5 members of its committed recruiting class. I think we're over 5, right?
There's not been any defections. There's been one.
Well, there's been more than that. There's been a bunch of decommits, and then this bookie kid does whatever he wants to go do. Everybody falls into that trap. Right now, Alabama doesn't fall into it all that much. But everybody does for the most part, and Alabama will come back to earth once again. But yeah, I see teams being, you know, cyclical, and some teams it's probably not going to be that dramatic. You might go 13-1, lose to Alabama in the championship game, and then go 8-4, and then 9-10, or whatever. But, you know, I don't think you're going to see dramatic long-term cycles of, you know, that it takes you forever to get to 12-1, and you go 4-8, 5-7, 5-7, 6-6, and then you win 10 again. I think the possibility exists that you can have 5 or 6, 7 double-digit winning seasons, then maybe you drop down a little bit. Mm-hmm. Unfortunately, we're in a really bad cycle right now because we've had bad leadership all over the place.
Bill, 30 seconds. I need a prediction, Minnesota-Nebraska.
I think Tanner Lee has a comfortable game throwing the football. I would hope Nebraska's run defense is at least has gone through a good strength and conditioning program this week for Bob Diaco, that they'll stop. You know, Minnesota's going to run the ball 50 times. That's just a given. I think Tanner Lee and Nebraska's receiving core is probably going to have a good game, and I think Nebraska will win it 109-13.
109-13, Nebraska.
Take the under.
Take the under, take the points, says Bill. Bill, yep. Enjoy Arizona. Have a great call tomorrow. Thank you for a few minutes today.
It's always a pleasure, once again, to be on the air with you.
There he is, Pride of Fairbury, NBC Sports, Bill Dolman. Thank you, Billy D. We'll get caught up with Alan Pinkett, Notre Dame Radio Network, and his thoughts on the U and the Irish.
He's in his 30s, but sounds like he was born with a stogie in one hand and a brew in the other.
Now, say my name.
It's Schmitty on Hail Varsity Radio.
I got the body of a taut preteen Swedish boy.
Back with you, Hail Varsity Radio, presented by the Nebraska Lottery. Let's get caught up with a two-time All-American at Notre Dame, second all-time leading rusher at Notre Dame. And he's headed down to the U as it's Notre Dame in Miami. Alan Pinkett back with us. Find him on Twitter at Alan Pinkett, part of the Notre Dame radio broadcast team. Alan, great to talk to you again, man. How are you?
Chris, always a pleasure, man, to talk to you, and hope all is fine in Nebraska.
It's been one of those years, my friend. I'll just leave it at that. I need to get your thoughts, though, as a guy who is a proud Notre Dame alum, one of the greatest players to carry the football for him. What do you think of Miami, my man? You're headed down to Miami, and you know what? Old Man Winter's kind of putting the Midwest in a headlock this weekend, so you're going to great sunny South Beach, and you get to see a hell of a football game on Saturday night.
Well, you know, I didn't mind the fact that the snow was drifting across the road when I was driving to the airport, because I know that I'm going to go get the Savage Tan when I get in Miami, but no, it's all about the game. And really, really excited that both of these programs have put themselves in a place, you know, where there's national prominence and national attention, and, you know, really, really proud of the fact that, you know, Brian Kelly, you know, took this team from a 4-8 record last year and has put them at number 3 currently. And, you know, that ranking is more of a distraction than anything else. They just want to focus on their opponent, and it's a mighty good opponent that they're playing, because Miami is back, and, you know, I just feel like the luckiest person in the world to be able to go down and call this game.
Well, and what's that Miami-Notre Dame rivalry do to you? You were on that team with Coach Faust, correct, where they kept just running it up. Am I correct in saying that?
The last time I wore a Notre Dame uniform, Miami put 58 points up on my ass. So, yes, it's kind of personal.
and that's, you know, it's, I love the 80s, the old VH1 show. When you look at Notre Dame, Miami, and the classic battles, of course, 88 and the 30 for 30 on that. The last time both these teams in the top 10 was 89, and they both had success in the 90s. And you mentioned Brian Kelly and the turnaround. And at any point last year, did you wonder if he might see 2017, because Nebraska's kind of going through a thing right now with Mike Riley and in the hot seat and that discussion. And what's your opinion here on why Notre Dame is so good this year and they had so many struggles last year? Was there some culture issues with last year's team?
Well, I'm going to try and make it a short answer, but I knew that Notre Dame, number one, was very, very young.
Okay.
And when you have young players, you're going to get mistakes. You have to live with those mistakes. But, you know, 7 of the 8 games that they lost, they had an opportunity to win at the end of the game, either win or tie. So that right there let me know that the players didn't give up on them. It was just a matter of making better plays in the end of the game. And so what happened was a sequence of events. After they lost their last game last year to USC, he made a speech in the locker room saying, okay, we're not going through this mess anymore. So we're going to take a couple weeks off, and when we come back, we are going to totally dedicate ourselves. Second thing that happened is he did exit interviews with all the players, and what he found was players wanted him around more. So he's done that. The third thing that happened was he had an 8-hour interview with the athletic director, Jack Swarbrick, on every facet of the football program. And they addressed all that. And, you know, coming into the year, he was very quiet. He was very confident. It was almost like he knew he had something, but he didn't want to reveal it. So now we're at this point where he thought he was going to be.
Alan Pinkett's with us, Hail Varsity Radio, Notre Dame, Miami, part of the Notre Dame broadcast team, a 2-time All-American at Notre Dame, Alan Pinkett with us. What were your thoughts here on the introspection? You mentioned the 8-hour interview with Swarbrick, and you make coordinator changes. I know you made a DC change midway through last year, but Wake was a really good defense a year ago. Notre Dame goes out and gets Mike Elko. The D coordinator has been tremendous. That Irish defense has been really good. And then Chip Long from Memphis, your reaction to how both those guys have fit in and performed?
Well, you know, you live long enough to where you realize what your strengths are and where you need to let somebody else handle something, you know, delegate.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's where Coach Kelly is. He's delegating to a point where he's letting the Chip Long run the offense because, you know, truth be told, I think Coach Kelly would rather throw the ball a little bit more than they currently are. They're running the football, but, you know, they're running the football is the 6th best in the country. So, and then with Elko, you know, he's really got those players playing fast and reacting and playing physical. And look, Brian Van Gorder was a great defensive coordinator. I had to go to one of my friends who's a coach, and I will not reveal his name, but what he told me was, look, Van Gorder is a guy playing an NFL defense with guys you can only spend 20 hours a week with. So, you know, no wonder there was so much apprehension and so much delay in how they were able to make a play. Elko understands the college game, and these guys, it's the same guys that lost 8 games last year that are beating other offenses up.
That's a lot about college, isn't it? Kind of just play fast, play with effort, and go get the football, right? Versus the scheme over the talent. Alan Pinkett, a few more minutes with us here on Hail Varsity Radio. Is about to head down to Miami for the big showdown on Saturday night between the U and the Fighting Irish. When you look at Coach Kelly, and you mentioned the exit interviews and the interview with the athletic director and the changes he made, with Notre Dame and the expectation, when it comes to the fan base and the AD, what's the difference between surviving a down year and what happens in college football where a lot of guys have a bad year and they're out? You know, the timetable sped up. Was it what Kelly's track record had been that allowed him to see this year? You mentioned the youth as well, but to me it sounds like the AD understood the situation that might pop this year. Is that fair?
Well, you know what? I got to give a pat on the back to Jack Swarbrick because he really does see the big picture. And you know, the one thing that Brian Kelly has done, there are a number of people that are behind him. There are a number of people that are against him.
Okay.
And that's just the nature of being the head coach at Notre Dame. But the one thing he's done is develop players. And, you know, the one thing that's sort of unfair is he developed them so good that they leave in their junior year. So you don't get a senior year
right.
out of them. You know, so, but, you know, I always say this, you never leave early to go late.
Right.
So if you're going to leave early, you're going to get drafted in the first round. Yeah. So, I mean, this year right here could well have been a year where you had DeShone Kizer at quarterback, Will Fuller at receiver. Yeah, I'd go down the line. But, you know, I only point that out because most fan bases, I'll say all fan bases, have expectations that probably are not real.
Sure.
And the Notre Dame fan base is no exception. They rely a lot on tradition, and you don't want to ignore tradition. But the game has changed, and Notre Dame, I think, has done the best job they can keeping up that tradition. So, you know, I always thought that the 4-8 season last year was an aberration.
Okay.
That this team that we're seeing this year is what was expected.
Last thought here, Alan Pinkett with us, Hail Varsity Radio, part of the Notre Dame broadcast team, color analyst. You've been in contact through your career at Notre Dame with Bob Diaco. You covered Notre Dame when he was the DC at Notre Dame. He's now at Nebraska's defense under Coach D is having a struggle in a transition year. It's year one for him. And it seems like he keeps digging himself a hole every time he talks, either after a game or during his Tuesday media sessions. And he's not real comfortable with it, but he's doing it anyway. What's your reaction been to some of the things he said this week?
Well, you know what? I've got a 25-year-old son, and he's provided a great deal of insight. I don't know if it came from me, but he found it out. He's a Penn State graduate. Mm. And, you know, he told me, when you're in a hole, quit digging. So, but look, here's the thing I know about Bob Diaco. Okay, he doesn't speak much, but what he says, he means, mm-hmm. and he believes. And anytime you take over a program, you know, there's going to be, you know, some obstacles in the way. I think that Coach Diaco can be a great defensive coordinator for Nebraska. I have seen him. If Notre Dame didn't have Bob Diaco in 2012, they would have never made it to the national championship game. So, you know, sometimes you get older, you get a little more outspoken.
Mm-hmm.
All right. But in terms of what he can do on the field, it's something that the Nebraska fans will look back on, you know, this week and say that didn't mean anything because he's got the number one defense in the country.
So the end product is something special. That's where we're at, Alan. We just don't know what direction Nebraska is going to go because of how the season's been, if there'll be staff changes or not. About 30 seconds here. Nebraska still a coveted job if there is an opening? What?
Oh, without a doubt. You know, one of my best friends in the world is Mike Rozier. Where'd he go to school?
He went to Nebraska and he was your teammate with Houston, wasn't he?
All right, look, Nebraska is – and look, you know, this stuff goes in waves. Notre Dame had their period where they were down probably about a decade.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the traditional powers always find a way to rise up. And it's just maybe not this year, but maybe next year Nebraska is going to be there.
Alan Pinkett. Alan, have a great call. Thanks for a few minutes today.
All right, Chris. Always a pleasure, man.
And now,
back to Hail Varsity Radio.
Time for a little cruton here with Greg Smith, Hail Varsity Radio, Hail Varsity Magazine, HailVarsity.com. Presented by the Nebraska Lottery, at Greg Smith HV is where you find Greg on Twitter. And his latest story with the Big Red Recon, got to see that every week from Greg. Mr. Greg, how are you?
I am excellent, man. A little chilly, but still good. How about yourself?
I'm good. And Greg was setting me straight on some rib do's and don'ts before we jumped on here. So I'm thinking I'm going to fire that up, go a little against the grain. It's a chilly and, you know, soup, potato soup weekend, especially if you're in the stands tomorrow. But, you know, if you got that football party for a road game going, I might do some barbecue. Now, when it comes to spiciness level, how spicy has the week been with recruiting for Nebraska? Fill me in.
You know, it's been interesting. You know, Nebraska, you would think that it would be worse, to be honest, if we're being realistic about it. But Nebraska, like we know, had a bunch of official visitors on the docket last week, had a lot of top-end guys in the house last weekend to see the game against Northwestern. But really, overall, I mean, everything is kind of in a holding pattern at this point, right? I've been saying here recently that at this point, no news is good news, because as long as guys aren't, you know, jumping out of the boat left and right and decommitting, you take that as a victory at this point.
Greg Smith is with us talking recruiting, HailVarsity.com and magazine at Greg Smith HV on Twitter. Let's dive into Mario Goodrich, his comments this week. A, on Riley not being let go, and then B, the decision to move back his signing day to February and not sign early. What's your read and reaction to this?
You know, as I wrote today in the Big Red Recon that you mentioned, like, Mario is one of the last commits that I would have ever expected to have this kind of stuff, you know, swirling around him, because he's a low-key kid. He's really drama-free. He kind of goes about his business. And I don't think that he, by any means, he did any of this on purpose. I think it's just the climate that we're in right now. So when you give an interview and you say that, hey, I know I learned this weekend that Mike Riley is going to be back, or that he won't be fired, and that Dante Williams will for sure be back, you're going to ruffle some feathers. Like, I think based on the reaction from fans to that statement alone, it tells you where we are, because they reacted very negatively to that. But then it doesn't necessarily jive up with what he actually told me after that, which was, hey, I'm going to push back my signing my national letter of intent to February and do it at the regular time now, which doesn't jive up with him saying that he thinks that the staff, but that he knows the staff is going to be back. So, I mean, kind of actions speak louder than words on that one. But like I said, it's just interesting that he was kind of the lightning rod for all of this. But he's absolutely a guy that Nebraska needs to keep in their class no matter what happens going forward with the coaching staff. That's one of the first calls that whoever is trying to keep him in the fold needs to make.
Is that possible if things are different in December than they are right now when it comes to names on a door?
Yes, I think there's a couple of paths here for to keep Goodrich in the class. Actually, three. The one would be if Mike Riley and the whole staff stays intact. That looks very implausible at this point. The second one is if there's a change made, but Dante Williams is able to stay on staff, which I guess could be likely because he doesn't have as many ties to Mike Riley, and he does have good recruiting connections and has only been here 1 year. And the missing piece to all of this in the secondary has been continuity, which the Huskers have had, you know, none of. And then the third way, if there is a change and you have a whole new staff, they could come in and re-recruit him and be able to keep him on board. You never know how that goes. If you remember last year with Cal, for example, Justin Wilcox from Wisconsin gets the job out there. They had some real good players in that class, and he got it pretty late in the cycle. He was able to get in and keep most of that class, if not all of it, intact. It happens. It's not as prevalent. It doesn't happen as much, but that does happen as well.
Greg Smith's with us, HailVarsity.com and magazine at Greg Smith HV on Twitter, recruiting segment here on Hail Varsity Radio. What's the latest with Joshua Moore?
You know, Josh is another one where I think that Nebraska still has a chance to kind of keep him. The longer you can push off this visit that's looming to Florida State, the better it can be. Nebraska has already held off Florida State once last week. Josh originally was going to go to Florida State, ended up making the trip to Lincoln because, as we all know, Florida State's in a lot of flux right now as well. So for Josh, when it comes down to, hey, I'm looking at Nebraska, who I'm committed to, I'm looking at Alabama, who I may not have a committable offer to at the moment, and I'm looking at Florida State, who's also in flux, it might lend yourself to sticking with you know, the girl that you know, so to speak, and sticking with Nebraska. I think they have a shot to keep him in the fold here, but it helps their chances dramatically if they can keep him from going back down to Tallahassee. But we don't know who the wide receiver coach is going to be down there, because all the talk is after this season that Jimbo's going to have to shake up that staff.
Tell me a little bit about some of the needs for Nebraska in 18.
You know, it's coming into the season, and they haven't really changed much. We're coming into the season, defensive back, wide receiver, pass rush were the three things that needed to be addressed, and that really has not changed at all. You've got some – I think that you've had some revelations on the current team when it comes to guys in that linebacker room, right? You've got your Colin Miller, who's played recently, and the staff is high on. You've got Ben Stilley, guys like that that have really played well, so that eases your fear there a little bit, but you still don't have that true dynamic 3-4 outside linebacker, so that's still a need. And of course, you're still out there chasing, you know, Micah Parsons, Elijah Wade. Elijah Wade was out there, 4-star outside linebacker from Vegas, was here last week for the Northwestern game. When you look at the defensive backfield, that's where you maybe are most concerned right now, considering they just lost their best one in Bukie Riley-Hiles, and then it's been difficult to get other guys to get in the boat, so to speak, because of all the uncertainty. So that's still going to be a really big area need. And then wide receiver, no matter, I feel like this has now gone flip the complete other way, right? Where we talk so much about wide receiver over the offseason and how they needed guys, and then we really figured out they needed guys once those injuries started happening. That's going to be even more of a big deal next year, because depending on who all comes back to the team, who may could leave the team, and then who's going to sign with the team, that position is in complete flux right now, with just a couple of guys that are going to return that you feel really comfortable about right now.
Greg Smith's with us here, HailVarsity.com and Magazine Recruiting Segment. Greg, got about a minute left. Want to switch gears and get your take on, Diaco Mania this week.
Boy, that was something. I think that is what happens when a guy doesn't really want to talk because he's not very good at kind of the public speaking and speaking to all of us at once. You mix that with he really wants to say some stuff that he just can't go there all the way fully. He can kind of leave you breadcrumbs and allude to it, but can't all the way go there. And then you get tongue-tied, and then we end up with, you know, the strain, the spectacular, and the beautiful players.
You know, and he'll take you up to the edge about what's there, be it players, family business, and honesty. Mm-hmm. He'll infer some things without saying much. I mean, it leaves you wondering and asking questions. Is that how you feel?
Yeah, that's exactly how I feel. And I think that he's in a bad spot, because even if he, you know, took it a couple of steps further and let everything out, I think he would face backlash for that the same way that he faces backlash for not doing it and being confusing, right? Like, I think that he's in a tough spot either way, and it all comes back to his underperforming defense, which statistically is basically worse across the board than they were last year.
No, absolutely. Find Greg Smith on Twitter at GregSmithHV and read him, HailVarsity.com. His recruiting recon, I can't miss. Greg, will catch up soon, bud. Thank you.
Hey, thanks a lot, man. Stay away from that crock pot.
No crock pot for ribs. I've made that decision. We will wish a very special happy birthday coming up and talk some barbecuing as we get into hour two. Hail Varsity continues, presented by the Nebraska Lottery.
And we're back.
Fellas, you think we could listen to the radio?
On Hail Varsity Radio, presented by the Nebraska Lottery.
Yes! That's awesome!
10 minutes away, Blair Kirchhoff, Kansas City star. His thoughts on Scott Frost. His take on the Chiefs, second half of the season in the college football playoff. Does the Big 12 scare you if you're the ACC, the SEC, or the Big 10? Is what Big 12 offenses are doing impressive because it's against the Big 12? We'll get into that with Blair Kirchhoff in a little bit. If you plan to go out tonight, it's a Friday, getting your weekend kicked off or extending your weekend. If you got started last night, make sure you have that safe ride home. Yes, I'm talking designated driver. That sober ride home is important. If you get pulled over drinking and driving, you'll face a DWI that could cost you up to $12,000 in fines and fees and in jail time, and be required to install that interlock device on your vehicle. There are some things you can't put a dollar amount on also with a DWI. as in your life or someone else. So make that sober ride home choice to remember. And remember, you do drink and drive, you lose. A message from the Nebraska Department of Transportation and Highway Safety Office. So Blair Kirkhoff, 10 minutes away. Friday forecast. Klausburn is back, so we have some picks and some bonus picks. A great weekend of college football. Here's what makes me wonder about the Big 12. And, I mean, you had a 65-55 or 62-52 shootout in Stillwater. And I think Lincoln Riley is a really smart dude. I think Oklahoma just puts running backs into the league. I think they're really good on both lines of scrimmage. And I think Baker Mayfield's your 2.0 version of Favre when it comes to excitement, play extension, and then throwing the football. But the last few times OU, and this is not counting Ohio State this year, they did well, they played well, but they got worked by Ohio State a year ago, and then Clemson has spanked them. Maybe Clemson's defense is just that good and sound to stop spread attacks. TCU has also been good at kind of maintaining control in ball games long enough to give their offense a chance to do things special. So I think you'll probably see if Oklahoma or TCU can sweep here. If TCU and Oklahoma play twice, the winner needs to go 2-0. Can't split this thing. If that happens, I think you'll get a Big 12 team in the college football playoff. I think you'll get Wisconsin in the college football playoff if they go unbeaten, especially with the injury situation they have. They're going to get some credit against Iowa if they get that win. And then there's Notre Dame, Miami. I don't know that there's a lot of faith in Miami. Yeah, they're talented. They're good. Mark Richt's a really good coach. Great kind of reinvention for him to leave Georgia, go down to the U. But Notre Dame, if they are sitting at 11-1 with a one-point loss, they are in. And then I think, I don't know. I mean, you have OU or TCU. You have Clemson. You have Notre Dame. You have an unbeaten Ohio, or you have an unbeaten Wisconsin. And then say Bama is unbeaten, because Bama's always unbeaten. Four spots, six teams. Maybe the discussion point is who's going to falter. Oh, yeah, that's right. The Big 12 will hose itself. Clemson will be in. Wisconsin goes unbeaten. Bama's good. We'll see about Notre Dame.
Welcome to Hail Varsity Radio, the voice of Husker Nation. Insight, opinion, expertise, with the biggest and best names talking Nebraska across the state. Join the show on Twitter at Hail Varsity and at Schmitz_radio. Call in at 402-466-ESPN or 1-800-825-5865. Here's Chris Schmitz.
Back with you, Hail Varsity Radio, presented by the Nebraska Lottery into Hour 2. Let's get caught up with Blair Kirkhoff, Kansas City star. Blair, how you doing?
I'm doing great, Chris. How you doing today?
Good, man. Great weekend of college football. I mean, just another kind of elimination weekend, you know, this month of November as we march towards what could be an incredible playoff. I wanted to have you spin the wheel of Scott Frost. That's been the topic here the last few weeks, and I know you know Nebraska football and have covered the program before, but you also look at football on a national scale. Where do you think Frost ends up at the end of the year?
Well, first of all, I think he ends up in a big bowl game.
Right. First things first, right?
Yeah. I think that they continue to win, and I don't have their remaining schedule in front of me, but I got to think they'd be favored to win out given what they've done so far, and so they'll be the team that represents the group of five in the major bowls. I'm not sure which bowl game that ends up being this year. Remember, we had Western Michigan in the Cotton Bowl last year, so there's that. But to the larger question, I've been telling people here that I think he needs to be Nebraska. Nebraska's next coach. I just do. I covered a lot of games in 97, 96 and 97 when he was there. And I was in the stadium when Nebraska fans booed him. And I can remember writing about it and reading what others who were there on a daily basis were writing about it and what people were saying. But I also remember when he was an assistant at Oregon many years later, an interview I think the Omaha World Herald did with him and how and they addressed that and how that was all in the past and the hatch had been buried and, you know, winning a national championship never hurt anything, and the way that he handled, you know, the post game pronouncement on the field at the Orange Bowl, I was there for that as well, and he pretty much talked the coaches into giving Nebraska a split for the title. I just find him to be the ideal candidate now for Nebraska, not just because of his ties there, but because of, you know, what he knows in the recruiting world, where he's been in the coaching world on both coasts, and the message that he can bring to Nebraska. And I'm not saying that he or any other coach, if there's a change made, would automatically come in and turn Nebraska into what it was or what the fans remember the great times as. But I do think that I think he's the strongest connection to the past, and he's proven his coaching chops at in Florida. So He's the guy. To me, he is. And I think who knows what Florida, who knows what the Gators are thinking right now, and what they're, you know, they're in a more immediate need since they've already made the move with the coach. And he's certainly high on everybody's speculation list there as well.
Blair Kirkhoff with us, Hail Varsity Radio, Kansas City Star at Blair Kirkhoff on Twitter. What can Nebraska get back to being if a change is made, or say Riley stays and staff changes are made? You're a national college football guy. What's a good holding pattern for Nebraska, knowing 60-3 and 3 out of 4 championships is extreme and great, but then there's also, you know, 4-8, 5-7, 500, sub 500 seasons won't cut it either. What should Nebraska aim to be in the future?
Well, I would start with over 500 every year.
Sure.
Top half of a division every year. I think that can happen. Oklahoma does that, you know, or when Oklahoma's playing in division ball. Right. Wisconsin does it. So top half of the division finish, over 500 overall, which means a bowl game every year, and playing for the conference championship every, you know, with every class, at least once a class.
Every 4 years,
so that's
sure.
Yes, every four to five years, however you want to define a class, playing for the conference championship. And then winning it on occasion. You know, it doesn't have to be every time you play in it, like Alabama. But getting there and winning it, I still think one of the most inexplicable streaks in college football now is Nebraska not winning a conference title since 1999. That's just unfathomable to me. And So I got in a discussion with somebody around here recently about Nebraska's brand and if it's still relevant, you know, on a national level. And the person who also works in sports was saying it was not. And this is a much younger person, somebody who's in their 30s, mm-hmm. much younger than me. So I said, no, that's not true. I still think the brand matters on a national level. When Nebraska plays on television, ratings points go up because it is Nebraska. And the sellout streak is still alive, and the game day scene is still as good as there is in college football. And it still matters deeply to fans there. And so there's that to sell. You gotta have the right guy selling it, and then it's not just that. It's once it gets sold, making sure you're running the right stuff and taking full, you know, players with the right approach and right attitude. We see that happen elsewhere. It needs to happen at Nebraska again.
Blair, a thought here on the Big 12, and you look at the Big 12 and the coaches there. I mean, Patterson's story on ESPN.com about Nebraska kind of passing him by in 08 or deciding to go with Pelini. And I'm just wondering here if Frost chooses Florida and Nebraska has an opening, is Matt Campbell somebody that would want to leave Iowa State? You've covered the Big 12. You're in the Big 12. Is he looking at a place? Would he look at a place that isn't as hard? Because he's been in Ames. It's only been 2 years, mind you. But that's not easy to recruit to. It's always a grind. But he also is a guy that I think loves the grind and makes his team love it too.
He does. He does. And I was in Ames earlier this week. The Chiefs weren't playing, so I had a couple of days to do some other stories. So I went up to Ames, and I got to talk with him and some coaches and players and just kind of focus in on the season that Iowa State, the amazing season that Iowa State is having, to beat two top five ranked teams in a matter of a month when they had only beaten one in the history of the program before this season. It really is. And to be doing it without a senior quarterback who had never started a game until this year, and with an offensive line that really has been not even up to Iowa State standards this year, to get to beat Oklahoma and Norman and then to, you know, hold serve at home against a really, really good TCU team, is just an amazing accomplishment in Ames. And I came away from my trip up there this week so impressed with him and the coaching staff and what's going on up there. And we talked about other jobs and his approach, and it was interesting. One of the things he said was when that staff left Toledo 2 years ago to come to Iowa State, he thought they were kind of getting away from this sort of speculation this time of year because it was happening at Toledo with the success that he was having. He goes, now I'm at a Power 5 school, and I can coach and have some, you know, hopefully have some success, and my name won't get thrown around. And sure enough, he has the month that he has, and his name is going to be on everybody's list because he is an impressive guy, and what they're doing in Ames this year. He's one of two or three, I think, who would be in the conversation for National Coach of the Year. But one thing he did say, and this is true, you know, Iowa State right now has the third largest stadium in the Big 12, 61,000 seats, and game days there are quite a spectacle. And, you know, these are Victory Star fans. I think they're some of the best fans in all of college sports because these fans have supported a lot of bad football over the years. And now they get rewarded with good football. And the place is just loony on game days. I think he's going to stay put at least one more year at Iowa State. At least one more, and maybe more than that. I think he really likes it there. I think he's going to be much richer as a coach after this season. And he deserves to be. I think he's at 2.1 total package. And I can see that, climbing, and not doubling, but not close, but not too far away from doubling. And Iowa State, I think, will take care of him and make it absolutely worth his while to stay.
You know, I think he's pretty loyal, and at some point you got to jump, but you can't scoot out too soon. That's a fine line. Blair Kirkhoff, a few minutes here, Hail Varsity Radio. Is there a defense out there that could slow down Oklahoma or Oklahoma State's offense? And I'm talking about the three or four other teams you kind of put in that playoff.
Yeah, that's the question. You know, the Big 12 is such an aberration with its offense that they play each other, and if you're not like Kansas State or TCU, where you use the play clock and you run the ball and you shorten the game and lengthen possession, if you're Oklahoma State or Oklahoma or Texas Tech or Baylor, when Baylor was going great guns, there are these crazy games that just, it's like watching a tennis match, back and forth, back and forth, back and forth. I was at the Oklahoma State game on Saturday, and it was nuts. And Jeff Long last year, the AD at Arkansas, and when he was the president of the college football playoffs, actually mentioned Oklahoma's defense when asked why the Sooners weren't more of a discussion point in the college football playoff. Now, the Sooners had lost two games; they weren't going to get in anyway as a Big 12 champ, but he made it a point to mention how bad the defense was. And I'm not sure it's terrible defense as much as it is hurry up offense and quarterbacks and offensive sets that come out of Texas 7-on-7, you know, culture. And but we see what happens when, you know, when Oklahoma plays Clemson in the college football semifinal 2 years ago, Clemson shuts them down in the second half. And we've seen it happen with other Big 12 schools when they play high profile bowl games. That offense, you know, that philosophy doesn't work as well. It's entertaining as heck, and I think the Big 12 with no divisions, the 110 team league, and everybody playing each other has meant good games, two or three good games every single weekend, and this weekend's no exception with Oklahoma State going up to Iowa State and the TCU Oklahoma game, and even K State West Virginia's this weekend. So really good games, good matchups throughout the Big 12 week to week, and I like that. But you know, for the reasons of offense and the fact that they beat up on each other, it's been tough for the Big 12 to get a second team in, or get a team, not a second team, but a team into the college football playoff Final Four.
You know, that's just the thing. Is it so awesome because it's in their league? But I think you're right, Blair. You step out and there's a dose of reality. I want to wrap with this. Blair Kirkhoff, Kansas City Star, kind enough to give us a few minutes today. The Chiefs are sitting at 6-3. They've already won at New England. They have beaten Philly. They've lost in heartbreak fashion to Oakland. They lost to a really good Pittsburgh team. What are the Chiefs? Are they your AFC Super Bowl favorite? Are they the number two team as they head past the bye week? Where do you kind of slot them in the championship chase?
Well, they've been all of that at some point during the first 9 weeks. After beating the Patriots and the Eagles in the first two games, they were number one in everybody's power rating. You know, for what that's worth in the NFL, a power rating, and that even continued. They started out 5-0 with winning out of LA, the Chargers, and beating the Redskins, and it was a great start. And Alex Smith was and maybe still is the midseason MVP with his play. If it's not Carson Wentz, I think it'd be Alex Smith. But what's happened over the last month, they've lost three or four, is some flaws on defense have been exposed, and they've got to get these fixed if they want to be a playoff contender. I think with the way the AFC West is shaking out, I think the Chiefs can't help but win the division.
Right.
And second half of their schedule is very favorable. I think they're going to end up with 12 wins, 11 at the worst, and I think that'll be more than enough to win the West. But will it be enough to beat a Steelers team that not only knocked them out of the playoffs last year, but beat them in Arrowhead in the exact same fashion with Le'Veon Bell running wild on them? And that's a scary proposition for the Chiefs because their run defense has just been so suspect. They can't figure out how to stop a really good running attack. Ezekiel Elliott held him under 100 yards last weekend, but the Cowboys still move the ball effectively on Kansas City. So they've got to get the offense is fine. Smith having a good year. Travis Kelce, Tyreek Hill, and Kareem Hunt all in the top three or four at their positions in the NFL. That's going fine, but defensively they've got to figure some things out. And if it's not Derek Carr throwing for 415 on them, it's Le'Veon Bell running for 180, and you can't have that in the NFL and winning the playoffs. Right now you would think that the Chiefs would not be favored over the Steelers, and even a team like the Jacksonville Jaguars I think would give the Chiefs a hard time with Fournette and the Jaguars defense. So that's kind of where they are right now.
Blair, it was awesome to catch up. We'll do this again. Thanks for a few minutes today.
Absolutely, Chris. Take care.
Blair Kirkhoff with us, and thanks to him, we'll get the forecast locked in as we send you into the weekend on Hail Varsity Radio. Some thoughts from Mike Riley to share with you as we move towards the 6 o'clock hour. Hail Varsity continues, presented by the Nebraska Lottery.
And now, back to Hail Varsity Radio.
Back with you, Hail Varsity Radio, presented by the Nebraska Lottery. It is time for the Friday forecast, presented by the Gamblers Assistance Program, the Nebraska Council on Compulsive Gambling and Choices Treatment Center. If you or someone you love has a problem with gambling, call the statewide helpline at 1-800-522-4700. Brandon Vogel, a Hail Varsity. Vogues, how are you?
I'm doing well, thanks.
And back from, we'll just call it detainment, Klausburn is with us. Klausburn, how are you?
Well, I'm feeling a little under the weather. I don't know if I've got a really bad cold or I'm sick of all the BS this week, but I'm ready to go.
Well, should be a great one. We've got a double bonus option here, time permitting at the end of things. Let's start things off. Oklahoma State at Iowa State. Cowpokes minus 6.5. I'll jump into the pool here first. I like Iowa State. I like Iowa State's defense. Not as good as TCU's, but they're pretty sound. And I think Oklahoma State may have a bit of a hangover after Bedlam. And maybe still feeling a bit sorry for themselves. Give me Iowa State 37, Oklahoma State 31. Give me the Cyclones. Vogues?
Yeah, I think with Oklahoma State's loss last week, they're probably going to be a popular pick here. But I kind of like the Cyclones, too. Cowboys ask you to be pretty perfect on defense, but that's kind of what Iowa State's built for. I think they'll pull one out here 31-30.
Okay, so we're both on the Coach Campbell train. Klausburn, what do you see here, Iowa State or Okie State?
Well, guys, I know sometimes my jokes are predictable, obviously. A lot of my jokes relative to the Oklahoma teams revolve around rusted out Ford Broncos and duct tape and 30 packs of natural light and catching catfish with nothing but your arm. And I really want to get away with that, get away from that. But then Gundy goes and grows a mullet. Mm. And I'm supposed to say something other than I wonder if he's tried to purchase a team bus with T-top? I don't think so. I don't think so. I'll take Iowa State in this one as well. I think it'll be pretty close. And I think they probably come back from a touchdown or so down and win it 31-28.
Let's talk Michigan State at Ohio State. Coach Gary Barnett had the line of the year. If Urban loses this one, he'll get sick again. I mean, it was hilarious. I don't know if Ohio State is 17 points better. I love the grin on Coach D'Antonio's face when he heard the line was up to 17. Oh, it's 17 now. I think Ohio State wins this, but I think Michigan State's a good football team. I think Sparty covers. Give me Ohio State 27 and Michigan State 20. A win, but no cover for the Buckeyes. Vogues?
Yeah, I think Michigan State has done a better job of being what it is at this point, which is pretty good. Ohio State, however, still has a higher ceiling to me. I think you'll get more of Matt Meyer this week. So I'll think the Buckeyes will win pretty comfortably and cover 35-14.
Okay, so you think it's woodshed time. I could see that happening, too, but I just think it's going to be a little bit tighter, tough football game. Klausburn, do you like Ohio State or do you like Michigan State here?
Well, I know that Iowa fans were really excited about last week's game, obviously because of the win, but also because the Buckeyes' game plan stunk so bad it masked the smell of the 36-million-acre hog farm known as Iowa. So I don't think Iowa State's, or rather Ohio State's, going to be that bad 2 weeks in a row. I think they win this one 31-21.
Okay, 10-point win, but the cover for Sparty. Speaking of Iowa, how about them Hawkeyes? They're at Wisconsin. You've got Orr that is out at linebacker. You have Cephas out at wide receiver. And the question is Wisconsin going to have to have Ornibrook win this with his arm? Iowa's playing really good football. They're inspired. They're playing a rival on the road, and they've won in Camp Randall before. I just don't think they get it done 2 weeks in a row. It's going to be a tight ball game. It's going to be a low-scoring ball game. Give me Wisconsin 17-14 over Iowa. Vogues?
Yeah, Wisconsin has been slow starting the past couple of weeks, but then finds a way to win. I think that speaks to kind of their overall quality. I do think it'll be a little bit higher scoring because of that. Iowa might jump out here a little bit, but Wisconsin ultimately comes away with it 31-21.
Okay, Klausburn, Iowa or Wisconsin?
Well, Iowa has looked decent. They're coming off a big win, but I'm worried about them. You know, as I mentioned, Iowa is a 36-million-acre hog farm, and every time they look over at Wisconsin's student section, they're going to think the fences back home failed to hold. So they're going to be worried about the prices of hogs if they all disappear. So I'll take Wisconsin in this one, 28, and Iowa 17.
All right, a win, but no cover for Wisconsin. TCU at Oklahoma, and Baker Mayfield could cinch up the Heisman this weekend, the first of possibly a sequel between these two for the much-anticipated Big 12 championship game. I think OU wins this. I think it's a bit tighter because TCU can play some ball. They run the football. They have a tremendous defense. Their back seven is good. Oklahoma just a bit too much. Oklahoma just a bit too much at home. 28-21, the Sooners win, but no cover for Boomer Sooner. Vogues?
Yeah, I think Frog's defense will keep them in it here. It should be a pretty fun game, although maybe not as high scoring as people typically expect with Oklahoma. But I think Oklahoma does end up getting it done at home, 31-27.
Claus, what do you think, your TCU or Oklahoma?
Well, I have to say, I've been taking a lot of heat the last 24 hours because Gary Patterson apparently wanted to coach in Lincoln. And, you know, in my defense, Bo may have allegedly wet his pants, but at least they stayed up. And that's really a concern of mine when hiring folks. I think this weekend will confirm my suspicion from way back then that Lincoln would do a number on Gary Patterson. I'll take the Sooners 35 and TCU 21.
Couple of minutes here for bonus football. Bama at Mississippi State. Do you touch this at all? It's minus 14. I think Bama wins it 31-17. They may cover, they may not, but it's going to be a tight ball game. Vogues, what do you think?
Yeah, I think Alabama is perfectly content to let everyone think Georgia is the number one team in the country, including Georgia. They'll win this somewhere along the lines of 27-17.
Claus, Bama or Mississippi State?
Well, this is tough because obviously Nick Saban is a really good coach, but I think Dan Mullen is a great coach that would fit really well at, another Power 5 school in the Southeast. And by the way, Christopher, if you can send the podcast of this episode to the athletic department in Gainesville, I'd sure appreciate it.
I will.
I'll take Bama in this one. Well, similar to you, but I'll take him 31-21.
All right. You have Georgia and Auburn. And it looks like Arkansas is going to keep Bielema, which means a safe landing spot for Gus if he doesn't get it done against Georgia, or Alabama is not in Fayetteville, where he's from. You know what? Alabama, I should say Auburn, is really good on defense. They've been good enough on offense. And they are a dangerous team. Georgia, maybe light on the offensive line. Can their run game get it done? I think Georgia wins this. I think it's just a really tight ball game. Give me the Dogs 27-24 over Auburn. Claus, what do you think?
Well, I don't trust a team that calls itself the Tigers and then has a bird fly in. So I'm going to take Georgia in this one by a score 31-17.
Vokes, how you feeling here? Auburn or Uga?
I was high on Auburn coming into the year, and they've still got a chance to get there, which would be taking the back roads to end up somewhere in the top 10 or top 8. So I'm going to take them to get this one done just out of personal interest. Give me Auburn 28, Georgia 27.
Okay, so it's going to be one of them. I like that. Nail biters, and Bo and Luke Duke might even be in attendance. I don't know. Let's head to Minneapolis. Could be a winter wonderland. It could just be cold. Who knows? But Nebraska is underdogged to the PJ Flex in maroon and gold, minus 2.5. Listen, Nebraska's better. Nebraska's deeper, and I think Nebraska is still fighting for bowl eligibility, and that's why they win this thing 21-17. You have enough of a run game from Ziggy to get it done. Minnesota's offense is brutal. They are very brutal, so I don't see that they'll be able to do much against the Nebraska defense, who's been really bad at times against the run. Just doesn't make sense for Nebraska to blow anyone out. But I think they win another tight one, similar to Purdue, 21-17, the win for Nebraska. Vogues, what do you think?
Yeah, if Mike Riley's Nebraska could play Minnesota 12 times a season, we might be talking about Coach of the Year honors. They've been remarkably good in these games. This is probably, well, definitely the worst Minnesota team they've faced, in my opinion. So I think they'll get one done here, too. It'll be close, but Nebraska pulled it out 23-20.
Okay, 23-20 says Vogues, Nebraska a winner. Klausburn, what do you think here, Nebraska, Minnesota?
Well, obviously, this has been an awful week, and this team has become Days of Our Lives meets Friday Night Lights meets Andy Griffith. And I'm a little disappointed in Mike because he said yesterday that they were working on the rugby tackling, and all I could think was, well, you're playing Minnesota, so you really ought to be working on your forecheck and puck possession and penalty kill. But either way, I think like you guys, Nebraska takes this one in a close game, 24, and Minnesota 21.
Should be a good one, and 11 o'clock kick for that. Our picks today are for entertainment purposes only. Between 6 and 8 million Americans meet the criteria for gambling addiction, and many more affected by another individual's gambling problem. Don't gamble more than you can afford, and if it stops being fun, please seek help. Problem gambling, not just a bad habit or a moral weakness. It's a serious condition, but with help, problem gamblers can put the game in perspective and make decisions to improve their lives. If you or someone you love has a gambling problem, in Lincoln, call Choices Treatment Center 24-7 at 402-476-2300. The statewide line is for the Nebraska Council on Problem Gambling. That is open 24 hours a day for you as well at 800-522-4700. Help is free, so call today. Klausburn, you take care of yourself. Thanks for your time today.
Okay.
Vogues, be good, and we'll talk soon.
Okay, thank you.
Friday forecast, Hail Varsity Radio. Good stuff from Klausburn. Thanks to him. I want to tell you about Rick and your friends at Sauter Heyman. 0% interest financing through 2020. Check out their extensive collection of both Earth Mind and Pure Grown Diamonds. And go check out the 1 carat diamonds available for just $99 down, $99 a month. SauterHeyman.com, 12th and O downtown Lincoln, South Point Pavilion, Lincoln or out west in Grand Island. We'll tell you what Riley says about the ball game tomorrow. That's on the way with Hail Varsity, presented by the Nebraska Lottery.
Chime in 402-466-ESPN or email the show, Chris at HaleVarsity.com.
Just try me. Try me.
Back to Hail Varsity Radio.
Well, it's about this time yesterday Mike Riley had his session with the media to wrap up the week of practice, let you know how things were going. And Coach Riley, amidst all of this, has one incredible sense of humor.
It was good strategic work, a lot of technical work. Spent a great deal of time yesterday on rugby tackling. And then we'll move on from there.
He is awesome. How many dudes can take 6 weeks of "You're not going to be here" and still smile and be pleasant and be classy and be awesome? And if every Nebraska football fan got three wishes, one wish would be for this dude to win at a high level. The other two, it's all your call, baby. I don't, it's fine. But if you got three wishes, I think one wish would be win football games. Win important football games, because you're pretty cool. You're pretty awesome. So the question was asked, was rugby forced on you?
No, that did not happen. No, it didn't happen like that. We all looked into it, and with their support, we brought this company in.
So, let's be safe. Here's what we think. Big Ten's paying us a lot of money. So, let's do the rugby thing. It was a suggestion. They said, sure, why the hell not? Pete's doing it. Not. Pick one of the weapons on the table and go sit down. But it wasn't that. So rugby was not forced on Nebraska football. So Coach Riley was then asked, you know, your reaction to Diaco, what he had to say, this situation.
Well, I, you know, the thing I heard the most about was the tackling part of it, you know, and like I explained to him, I think that it would be, I said I can kind of explain the history of all that very easily like I just did. So I'm not worried about the rest of it, Sam. You'll have to give me some specifics because I really don't know the particulars. And I do know this, that, that, you know, I think what we always try to do is be open with who we are, what we're trying to do, and you know that we're never in a position to, you know, it's like, you know, we're not going to talk about anything that is not uplifting to this program and the players in the program. So that's basically what I think about it all.
So that is translated to me, if you don't have anything nice to say, do not say it at all. Period. So here's how you come back if you're Bob Diaco. You, and I know it's Minnesota, so it won't mean as much, but you'll take it. You shut out Minnesota. You have about 17 tackles for a loss. They rush 49 times for 48 yards, and you have a couple of pick sixes. That's how you come back from this week of from bad to worse to you're on drugs, that type of progressive look. One thing Nebraska will be trying to do is run the football. How will they try and do that Saturday?
You know, we've been, I would say if you ranked our top two running schemes, it would be zone first and gap second. We have always, almost every game, some of both involved. Hopefully we just get some running game going, whichever evolves in the game as the best way to do it. We got to get some runs going.
I'm not going to go football nerd here when it comes to zone and gap, but one's a little more physical than the other, and you've heard and maybe know and probably know the term outside or inside zone. Are you trying to run outside or are you trying to run inside? And one thing about Minnesota here is they are, I won't call them tiny, but they are smaller and fast on the outside. They're a smaller defense. Here's my biggest question with Minnesota. They've always overachieved. When I say always, I'm saying under the Kill regime. And under Dilly Bar last year, they still won 9 games. They just don't give a damn. They are just tough. They are tough on both lines of scrimmage. Every year you say, well, who the hell's Minnesota got at quarterback? You say that again this year, but the guy can run. He can extend third down plays. And Minnesota just outgrinds you. And now you have a car salesman, and that's not a disrespect to car salesmen out there. You have PJ Fleck come in and sell this Red Bull IV energy mantra. And it's worked at Western Michigan. He embraces leadership. He exudes positivity, which I think you got to have. But you're a program in Minnesota that was a 9-win football team last year and beat Mike Leach and the gang and then the Holiday Bowl. They blow out Clay's There's no remnants of Jerry around. I think Moorhead's at Penn State. He was kicking butt and taking names with that offense at Minnesota to the tune of you'll score between 20 and 30 points and their defense will, you know, allow 3 to 7 less in road contests. I think this situation Fleck walked into is every bit of what Riley came into in 2015. You're going from a guy you loved and a style of guy that you wanted to play for to a whole different style, different coaches. And while people bitched and moaned about 9-4 here and there, you'll take it now. You'll run to it now. And I just think it's not a clean mesh this year with Fleck. I think if he gets him to a bowl game, you'll get some buy-in for year two with him. And he'll be fine there for 5 years. It's just how quick does it happen there? Same type of speed he got at Western Michigan, where they went 1-12 or some ungodly number to by year three or four, they're 13-1. Well, I think that expectation's there for him, that he's got to win. He's got to win pretty quick. And if he wants to get out of Minnesota, he really wanted the Oregon job too, so this is probably his second choice. You want to know the truth. Some final thoughts, and then we'll get to that birthday wish. Hope you're well. Great to be with you on a Friday. Action hero Colton Stone, Chris Schmidt. You miss any part of the week's episodes of Hail Varsity Radio, take us with, man. Log on, hailvarsity.com. And the More tab will give you the podcast. iTunes will give you the podcast. The ESPN Lincoln app will hook you up with the podcast as well.
Miss us?
Come here, brother. Give me a hug. Bring it in for the real thing.
We're on call for you. Catch the podcast at hailvarsity.com, the ESPN Lincoln app, or download them on iTunes.
Saddle up, partner.
Back to Hail Varsity Radio.
One final time, Chris Schmidt and 80s action star Colton Stone. Weekend edition tomorrow morning, 7 to 9, with myself and Mark Kranek. Yeah, I'm going into this thing Saturday thinking the offense will perform well enough on the line. And it's going to be a Ziggy-type game, isn't it? Cold, maybe a little snowy. You see the steam coming off the helmet, out of the helmets, and the breath may or may not be nuclear, but that steam coming out from the helmet and just football. Now, I'm not going to ask if you would or wouldn't wear sleeves, but do you miss the days of no sleeves in weather like this? Potential weather? Remember how cold it was for the Big 12 championship game against Oklahoma? That was so cold. It was at Arrowhead. Didn't end well. Point is, and Nebraska tried to throw the football instead of handing it to Brandon Jackson. I'm sorry. I've got 06 on my mind here because my little boy, call him Junior, it's his birthday today. Now, he's clearly not listening. He's working Grandma and Grandpa and Mama Bear for some sort of supercomputer that he can play games on and, air quote, do schoolwork. So we'll see how his sales call went in about a half hour or so. But he is 11 today. He's my pride and joy. I love him very much. He's awesome. So he's a guy I love watching and talking sports with. So I hope he's had a good day, and I'll get to see him in a little bit. You know, J.D. Spielman's headed home. Sometimes that can freak you out if you're a coach and guys maybe try too hard at home. And Spielman's an incredible player that got away from Minnesota. Does that happen? Is Riley worried about that going into tomorrow?
You know, I haven't said anything to him really about it. I haven't felt the need to give him a lot of advice about how to handle. I don't even know if he knows where he is yet. I'm just going to leave him alone and let him keep playing. Not really. I think there may be an added picture to this, you know, playing back in Minneapolis or in Minnesota. But I have been so impressed with that young man, just the fact that he is pretty mature and just goes out and competes and makes plays.
He's been incredible. And he's been your option. He has been Lee's favorite guy to target. He's been Lee's favorite guy on third down. He hasn't dropped. He has very few drops. Tight ends, some. Other wideouts, upperclassmen, too many. But Spielman has been incredible. And if Nebraska is going to win, Ziggy's got to go for 100 with a minimum of 4.5 a carry. And Spielman's got to have 125 in total yards. It's rushing and receiving. I think that's doable. We'll talk to you tomorrow morning. Weekend edition of Hail Varsity. Stay bundled up tonight. Thanks for your time. Thanks for tuning in. Big thanks to Colton Stone, 80s action star, producer-engineer for Hail Varsity, Chris Schmidt. And so we will find you in the morning and next time on Hail Varsity, presented by the Nebraska Lottery.